Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Curtain.
And make sure to join our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
Our guest this week has had a bird's eye view into the creation of such hit shows as George M., No No Nanette, and Starting Here, Starting Now, as well as some lesser-known musicals like So Long 174th Street and Diamonds.
But she is best known for her collaborations with Andrew Lloyd Webber, starring in the Los Angeles and Broadway productions of Evita, as well as what many consider to be the definitive Grisabella in Cats.
To tell us what it was like to dance with Nureyev, clown with Bobby Van, and tackle Hal Prince, literally, here, taking a break from doing the Sunday Times crossword puzzle, is Lonnie Ackerman.
Hi.
How are you?
I tackled Hal Prince physically. The final audition for Evita in L.A. was at the Schubert Theater, and it was like, 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, and I'd already had two auditions. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so I put on the chignon and the red lips and went in, and there was a whole huge line of people. I mean, people who called back, like John Shuck. Who else was there? Pam Dauber was there, you know, Mindy, Mindy. And I was just like tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. I just thought, okay, I just have to be this woman for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I go in, and he's very soft-spoken, and he says, well, let's do Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
And you're on the stage.
I'm on the stage.
Like, literally on stage.
I'm literally on stage in my little outfit and my Ava outfit. and so I do Argentina, and then he calls me to the foot of the stage on the side. And very softly he says, let's do this. And I thought, fine, he wants me to sing the song again. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of like turn on my heel and I start to walk away, and he said, all right, well, I guess I'll see you in rehearsal. And from being very stoic and cold, I went, wah! And I jumped off the stage into his arms. I almost knocked him down. We both almost fell on our heads.
Funny.
He saw this thing coming at him. I just ran and literally jumped off the stage.
Just attacked him.
That whole experience, that company, was breathtaking.
Where were you in Los Angeles? What theater were you
at? The Schubert.
You were at the Schubert, which is no longer there.
No,
right? They tore that
it's
down.
Gone. Yeah. Going. I did every talk show that I'd ever dreamed of doing. Mike Douglas, Dinah.
Yeah.
Who else was
it? What were they like?
They were so kind. They were the greatest. Dinah was, I did her show 3 times and actually cooked on the show. I made pierogi, Russian meat pies, you know, Jewish meat pies.
Of course.
Yeah, and Dinah was Jewish. Well, this show,
yeah,
this
yeah.
particular show, it was Charles Nelson Reilly and Shelley Winters were the guests.
Oh,
so I swear to God, so I'm, you know, they have like a little stove set up, and I have it on tape, and I'm mixing the filling. And, you know, all of a sudden, this hand with a spoon comes over my head and starts scooping out the filling, and then it's disappearing, and I hear chomping behind my ear. And I look around, and it's Shelley Winters, who's, like, taking the filling and eating it on camera.
Did you do Merv Griffin as well?
Oh, I did Merv Griffin. Oh my God. I did one time. I did the Merv Griffin, and he wasn't there. It was Bobby Vinton. And, of course, he introduces me as Lonnie Anderson. And I walked out, and he goes, you're not Lonnie Anderson. Really?
Yeah.
Surprise. So Merv, I did his show several times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here, I think I did it 2 or 3 times here. I did it a couple of times out there. I did Regis. Mm-hmm. But those were, you know, you grow up kind of watching these talk shows.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in New York?
Yeah, I'm from the 79th Street between Columbus and Amsterdam.
And your parents were supportive of you going into the business?
I don't think they had a choice.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
There was no, I knew when I saw them crack up in, you know, I didn't tell you that. Well, the first show I saw was Mr. Wonderful.
Yes.
And I saw Cheetah and Jack Carter and Sammy Davis Jr. And I've told Cheetah this. I saw them crack up on stage, and I thought, I was six or seven. I said, that's for me. I was sent to ballet school because I was chubby, and I just got sidetracked into ballet. All I wanted to be was in the Royal Ballet, and that was my Nureyev experience.
Oh,
my God. I stole one of his socks.
You stole his sock?
His warm-up sock. This is all in my act. He was practicing. He was practicing a variation from either Swan Lake or Corsair or something, and I was a student at the Metropolitan Opera Ballet School, and that's why we were all in the ballet. I supered in Lohengrin, and there was a metal ladder, and his warm-up socks were hanging on the ladder, and I know he saw me out of the corner of his eye, and I ran and I took one. That was 1963. I still have that sock. And it's still
it's over your mantle somewhere.
Oh, no, it's under my pillow.
How did you first get associated with Richard Maltby?
The first show I ever did was How Do You Do, I Love You. It was about a secretary, Phyllis Newman, trying to find a husband. And it was very 60s.
Yep.
Back then, choreographers would come to class to look for dancers. And, I mean, there would be people like David Winters, a lot of the guys from West Side Story who became choreographers. This was like 1966, 67. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had already become choreographers, but they would come to these classes, like Jaime Rogers. So Tony Mordente, who had been married to Cheetah Rivera, he came to class, and he was looking for some young dancers. And he said, I didn't have an equity card or anything. And he said, well, just come to this, audition. So I my 95 pounds, long black hair, and little ballerina. So I go to the audition, and I dance. And it's Richard and David are sitting there, and Arthur Rubinstein, who was the conductor, Jonathan Tunick, Larry Rosenthal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all these guys.
Wow.
Oh, it was amazing. Stone Whitney was the director. And so I get through the dance. It's fine. And then they said, well, would you sing? And, of course, what do I sing? Rockabye Your Baby with the Dixie Melody. I had no music. It goes ra-da-da-da-da-da. And that was like a B-flat. So Phyllis Grandy or Sandy Campbell, they were playing, and their mouths, they didn't expect that out of me. They expected I enjoy being a girl, or I feel pretty.
Yes, of course.
And this huge voice comes out because all the records I'd sung with were like Merman and Sammy Davis is a Coconut Grove, I mean, I
so
knew
how to project. You learn from the best.
And then there was a song in the show called Zeroing In on You, and at some point there were jungle noises, and so Arthur said to me, he took me over to the piano. I guess he wanted to see what my range was, and he said, "Can you like make funny jungle noises?" And yes, I can. Yes. If I can remember. Don't ask me why. That was pretty good. So Michael Stewart was the book writer. And he was in the process of writing the show called George M. He had all the girls come to audition. Now, I'm a ballet dancer. I'm a jazz dancer. I am not a tap dancer. I am probably one of the worst tappers ever. And it was a tap show. So everybody was trying to teach me. Luigi was trying to teach me. My mother was trying to teach me. And it was just, there was no hope. So I went to the open call. And from the waist up, I was just brilliant. Didn't wear tap shoes. I wore white jazz shoes. And I remember just kind of faking it.
Yeah.
And so Joe Layton lined up all the bad tappers. I mean, I knew what was happening. And I'm telling you, I was on the end. I was the last one. And he knew a lot of the dancers, and he had a couple of them stay, and now he getting to me. And I figured, all right, it's over. But at least I tried. And I saw, this is out of a movie, Michael Stewart in the back, I think it was the Mark Hellinger, run over to Joe Layton and whisper something in his ear. And the next thing I know, he said, Lonnie, you stay. He had us in groups. And he said, do any of you play an instrument? And a couple of girls raised their hands. One played the drums. One played Rachmaninoff. And I raised my hand. And he said, what do you play? And I said, I play piano. He said, what? I said, ragtime.
Amazing. Stride piano.
Stride piano.
Amazing.
He said, why am I? Exactly. Yeah. He said, why am I not surprised? And Jay Blackton, who was the conductor, he came over and he said, so I played, it's either Kitten on the Keys or Dizzy Fingers.
Nice.
Because when I played, it usually sounds like Darlene and Jonathan Edwards. It's just so terrible. So he said, okay, can you play Alexander's Ragtime Band? And I said, well, you got to throw me the chords. And he said, okay. So he's throwing me the chords. And my right hand, something took over my right hand because I never played it like that again. I mean, there were chords and things and runs. And I'm like, this is really weird. And the next thing I knew, I was a dog trainer and second piano player. The first one was Scott Salmon. Then when we were in rehearsal, all the girls had to audition for The Maid to sing 45 minutes from Broadway.
Oh.
So there was a line in the middle of the song, and I'm the youngest there, and the line was, Faye Templeton says, you know, Rose, stop singing that song. And the maid, Rose, says, in a minute, honey. So all the girls were going, in a minute, honey, in a minute, honey. Now, of course, one of my favorite singers was always Satchmo. So I go, I have nothing to lose. I go, in a minute, honey. And they all looked at me. You know, when you have nothing to lose and you don't know anything, go
just
for
make
it.
Make a choice and you go.
I made a choice. And
that's brilliant.
And you got it.
I got it. I got it.
What was it like working with Joe Layton?
Oh, he
what
was
made
the
him
best.
So brilliant?
He was so ahead of his time. There was a thing called the montage where we did all the famous songs, which replaced this. It wasn't a dream ballet, but it was a ballet that took place. It covered the First World War and to the time that he comes back.
Oh, okay.
And it was just brilliant. Yeah. And, you know, we became a war machine. There was like, you know, the stock market crash. It was all in this very modern, ahead of its time ballet. And we got to Detroit and people in the audience just went, and of course it was replaced by, you know, Yankee Doodle Dandy and your classic.
Sure.
But he was really good to me. I think he kind of got a kick out of the fact that I was such an old young person.
Yes.
Because all my physical comedy was from all, I grew up watching Olsen and Johnson.
And now your mom was a producer as well as?
Well, she, as well as my mom. At one point she was working very closely with Joe Papp. And I remember this one day, he wanted to do a version of Hamlet at, I think it was Rikers Island. And it was a prison that was no longer used.
Yeah.
And she went with him to Rikers. And she said she went through all the, just walking through all the old empty cells and stuff. And he said to her, you know, you really should do this on your own. You could be a producer. And so that led her to think, well, maybe to do, it's almost like an encores, to do a repertory company of older musicals, forgotten musicals, but to do them full out, to do a few a year.
Yeah.
And then she was introduced to Buster Davis and Raoul Pendubois and Harry Rigby. And Raoul, who had designed Gypsy and, you know, I mean, he was just a genius. It was either he or Buster who had said, well, you know, No, No, Nanette, it could work on its own. Buster Davis and I did all these backers auditions, and nobody put in a penny. I was doing Dames at Sea.
Oh, yes.
I was playing Ruby. They were trying to find someone to play Sue. So I come home from the show one day, one night, or one afternoon, and they're like, banging their heads because they had already had Busby Berkeley in mind. That was like, you know, if you could wake him up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So I walk in and I say hi and I hear them talking and I said, well, is Ruby Keeler still alive? And they all go, and that's how they thought of Ruby. The first matinee in Boston, the audience rushed the stage. They ran down to the orchestra pit screaming. And then the phone call started coming in. Can we invest? Can we invest? And my mother brought the show in under budget. She was not well received because this woman comes out of nowhere, you know, rich Upper East Side housewife, which she wasn't. She ran the American Symphony for 10 years. And it was, it wasn't a great time. I mean, the only time I had fun was those eight lines singing, you know, but the rest of it was pretty nasty. Yeah. Probably I should have never done the show.
Did
personally.
You feel like people gave, thought it was nepotism?
Oh, yeah. But the only time I showed them that it wasn't was when I was on stage.
Of course.
And it was tough. Yeah. It kind of, it did toughen me up.
Was it the cast?
It was a lot of the cast. A lot of them. A lot of them weren't. There were just, I don't even remember. I think most of the half of them are dead. But Helen Gallagher was kind of like my surrogate mother. She is my surrogate mother. And Bobby Van, they were my closest friends.
Can we talk about Bobby Van for a second? Who was brilliant, left us way too soon.
Way too soon, was horrible.
Tell us what it was like working
with Bobby
Van. Oh
my God, there wasn't a night that I wasn't like wetting my pants because he was nobody was as funny as Bobby. And he taught me more about comedy. Bobby kept saying, just trust what you're doing. Just go and trust it. I mean, opening night of Evita in LA, he calls me and he says, I don't care if you throw up before 6 o'clock. I don't care if you throw up after the show. 8 o'clock to 10:30, you just stay in that show, Evita.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't care what you do before or after, but once that curtain goes up, that's where you are. And I went, okay. And I thought about that. When the curtain went up, I went, oh my God, what am I doing here? And then I thought about Bobby saying, just be there. But we had two moments that actually Bert Shevelov, the director, had to cut back because we were stopping the show.
Too funny.
Oh, it was just two stares. We would stare at each other and he would, he kept saying to me, just hold it. Don't move. Just hold it. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger until we would get applause on just two little movements. And Bert, of course, came in and he said, this is not, you know, Othello. You need to stop this. So we cut them back and then we'd like let it creep in again.
Of course.
But he was hilarious. He was so hilarious. Yeah. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
Jack Gilford.
He said to me one time, I don't know, I was in Bobby's dressing room, and it was one of those days where you just feel like really bloated. I think I was retaining a little bit of fluid and a little water. And Jack heard me, and he comes down, and he said, haven't you ever heard of peeing?
Great. Dr. Gilford.
Thank you, Dr. Gilford. He was really funny.
Patsy Kelly.
She never overdid any comedy. Some of the other women who played the maid, they just went so far. Like Martha Ray used to, you know, turn her back to the audience and pull her dress up, and she had big polka dot, you know, pantaloons on.
Very broad.
Very broad. Patsy was, she just stayed within the limits. But that was also Bert Shevelov's direction.
Mm.
He said, you can never comment on this. This is camp. And if you comment on camp, if you don't play this straight and modern, it's not going to work.
Did you? I'm just curious. There was a whole book about.
Oh yeah, I skimmed it. I told my mother, the guy who wrote it,
Don Dunn.
He was the assistant. The assistant to the publicity person. Her name was, I don't know, CJ, JC, something like that.
Yeah.
This was her boyfriend. And back then, reporters carried big, you know, tape recorders, you know, and shoulder straps.
Yeah.
And I remember my mother didn't have an office yet, so all the meetings took place in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And he, for some reason, he was allowed to sit in. Because it was a very, it was kind of, it started out with a great feeling.
Sure.
And he would sit in, and he must have seen that this was going to be something. And he would come in, and he had that tape recorder, but nobody knew it was running. And I suppose I was named as some kind of spy, which was, I didn't talk to anybody because it was so horrific. I was really naive about it. I thought, this is idiotic. I mean, why? It's supposed to be fun. And it wasn't. And that book, actually, Ruby was really devastated because they went after her and her past. And I remember my mother saying to her, do not give this book any power. Just, she wanted to sue and everything. She said, let it go. You know, just because they said horrible things about my mother, you know.
Yeah.
She just brought the show in under budget, you know, and kept a very firm hand on what was being spent. And, I mean, she bought everybody tickets to the Tonys. Yeah. I mean, everybody went. Stagehands, everyone went. You know, So, but she's tough. She's a very, she's a businesswoman.
Okay. So you do Nanette.
I do Nanette.
Did you go on tour with it?
I did the bus and truck.
You did a bus and truck.
I played Lucille. I did
That's
it. It was
what,
like two years later. And when I teach, I tell the kids, I said, if you can find a bus and truck, this is how you learn. Yeah.
Did Ruby Keeler and Patsy Kelly go with you on tour?
Oh, no. Or? I did the tour with Evelyn Keyes.
Evelyn Keyes,
Benny Baker, and Betty Keen, who was Jane Keen's sister.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun. That was really crazy. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine those people on a bus?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
I can't.
Oh my God! I mean, sometimes we would drive through the night.
Yeah.
You know, and it was raunchy. It got really raunchy.
Raunchy
bus. Oh, yeah. But it was so much fun. I mean, there was one, Gainesville, Florida, which is, I don't think, the most democratic town.
Yeah.
We were in a high school, and they put together in the cafeteria, this is where we did the show, on tables. They put tables together.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, it was hilarious, but it was great. Oh, yeah. No, we 9 months, 8 or 9 months. But it was a great experience. And then I got home, and I get a call from John Kenley. He was very famous, had this huge summer circuit in Ohio, and the Kenley Players.
Yeah.
And he died a few years ago. I think he was like 103.
Yeah, he had a nice long
He
life.
Was a hermaphrodite. You know, in the summer, he was John, and in the winter in Florida, he was a woman.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I get this call. I'm unpacking my bags. And he said, is this Lonnie Ackerman? And I said, yes. He said, this is John Kenley. And I said, oh, hi. He said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I just got back from the bus and truck. I know. Can you come? We need you to replace Vicki Lawrence in Nanette. And because I figured she was pregnant.
I
think she was not feeling well. And it was Gail Gordon, Virginia Mayo, and Kathleen Freeman. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, when? Today. I repacked the bag and flew to Ohio, and I don't remember how many weeks I was there. It was a riot.
Can you repeat that cast one more time? Just
because? Gail Gordon, Virginia Mayo, and Kathleen Freeman.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, that was wild.
I didn't know Gail Gordon did anything besides the Lucy show.
Oh, no, he did. He was Uncle Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah.
No, that was fun. Benny Baker was fun. He was great. He had done so many of all those old movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Their history, you know, you learn from watching them. Some of them did too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, oh, my God, I'm on stage with these MGM movie stars.
Legends.
Yeah. And I mean, the women come full makeup, you know, it was like, and they wouldn't wear their hair in the style. They had to wear their hair the way they wear their hair.
Oh, interesting.
It's like, you know, Ann Miller. Yeah, it was a great group.
Really good group.
Yeah.
And when did So Long 174th Street come into all of this?
That was in 1976. I was doing the magic show. So I was there for almost a year.
Wow.
No, maybe 7 months. And then I got so long 174th Street. And so I took that big hit. But that was
16 performances.
Yeah, 16, 16. But Bobby Morse, another one who's just so hilarious.
Yeah, he's
a great guy.
And this was, what was the story of So Long 174th
it's
Street?
It's Carl Reiner's Enter Laughing. It's about this young guy who wanted to be in theater, and he gets involved with, you know, a Meshuggah theater group. Mm-hmm. And George S. Irving, who could never keep a straight face. Every night, Bobby Morse destroyed him. He absolutely destroyed him. Yeah, so... Unfortunately, it didn't last, but that was so much fun.
What do you think didn't work about it? Because 16 performances, it's...
Well, it was in the wrong theater. We were at the Harkness, which was on Broadway in 63rd.
Oh, way up there.
That was the old NBC... No, it was a television studio. Because I used to go to see the Steve Allen Show live. My grandmother would take me to that and to see, you know... the Today Show, and you know, we'd sit at Howdy Doody. It was so far out of the way. It was good. Maybe Bobby was a little too old for the part. I don't know. It didn't get all terrible reviews.
Yeah.
But I do think it was in the wrong theater and they didn't sell any tickets.
Tell us about the song Men.
Oh,
which is probably the song most known from the show, and you got to sing it.
I got to sing it, and it was just so much fun. So there's a story. Did I tell you this?
No.
The ending of the song ended very abruptly. It was men, da da da, men, 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 and I thought, well, this is really anticlimactic because this is not working. So Luther Henderson, we're in Philadelphia, and Luther Henderson and Wally Harper and Bert Shevelov were all in the theater. And once again, I said, can I say something? And now I had more experience, so I thought, okay, I can say something. I'm playing opposite Bobby Morse. And Rhapsody in Blue was always one of my favorite movies. And the opening clarinet solo... I just live for that solo, that run.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this takes place in the 30s, or is it? Yeah, I think it's the 30s. And I said, you know, the way the song is written, and it's like, it's a saloon song, and it's got all those blues things in it with the, you know, with the clarinets and in the orchestrations. I said, I think it should end like the opening of Rhapsody in Blue. And Luther and Wally went, well, what do you mean? And I said, I think it should go, man. And they went, So Luther starts playing, and Wally's going like this. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I just got an ending to a song that could be really good. And we kept doing it. And finally, Bert Shevelov said, stop already. You're making me deaf. I can't stand it. Shut up. Okay, you can do it like that. And then opening night, it just tore the house apart. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then we closed.
I have to say, I love it when you say, can I say something? Because every time you say, can I say something,
something
brilliant comes out of it. Ruby Keeler, the ending to this. This is great.
It was just, and few and far between. But when I really believed in something, when I really was thought that this really could work, that's when I would say something.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
And then a year later, starting here.
Oh, that's
starting
right.
Now.
Not even a year later, we closed, and then we did, it was the old Manhattan Theater Club, or Stage 73, in the fall. Richard called, and he said, how would you like to, you know, do? It's a review, and a lot of the songs are from How Do You Do I Love You, and I said, yeah, sure. And the original guy was Michael Tucci, who went on to be in Grease and stuff, and then... Marjorie Cohen, and so we did the first run at stage 73, and then Michael, I guess he was going into television, or he was going to do the movie of Grease, maybe. Mm-hmm. So he was replaced by George Lee Andrews.
Oh.
And that was just, like, perfect.
Yeah.
And so we were at Barbara Ann, and I don't know how long we ran. 6 months, maybe?
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe not that long. But then again, you know, no publicity. It's, and it was such a really good show.
Yeah.
And there was this little kid on Sundays who would, he loved, his mother was one of the producers. Her name was Mary Jo Slater. And her son, who was like 9 years old, who would love to get up on stage with us on Sundays, and George would do like a, you know, a joke with him. His name was Christian Slater.
What a good career.
And then he went
yeah.
into the,
and
he
then
went
he,
into music
yeah.
too.
That's,
he was,
yeah.
He, in the early 80s.
Yeah. So we can thank George Lee Andrews for teaching Christian how to tell a joke on stage.
Thank you, George. If you're listening, thank you. Yeah, we're going to get George on the podcast in a couple of weeks.
Oh, my God. He is hilarious.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
He is hilarious.
Crossword Puzzle, which once again is probably one of the better known mm-hmm. songs from the show. Tell us about that. What did that come from originally? Or
I think it was from another review. I think when they were at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
I think okay. I'm not quite sure, but only one other person had sung it, and it was slightly different. So I love laundry list songs.
Mm.
And I said, okay, fine. So we just did it. And it was kind of like I always thought of my father, because he never missed a Sunday Times crossword puzzle ever in like 60 years.
Oh, really?
Never. He would do them in pen.
Oh, one of the ink
yeah.
ones.
Yeah, I can't
smart.
Do one.
Yeah.
No.
No, and here you think I'm like brilliant. I never. Never. So I know it became like a signature song,
yeah.
which was like really funny.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we took it all over. We went on tour.
I heard a story. You performed the show in Florida and they wouldn't pay you? Is
uh-huh.
that right?
We were at a dinner theater, and I'm pretty sure it was run by like French mafia. And
in Florida.
French,
your French
in
mafia
Florida,
in Florida.
In Florida. They were pretty shady. And I was the deputy.
Oh.
So for three of us,
yeah.
and they weren't paying us, and we were supposed to get our checks. It was a Thursday, and they were just messing around and like saying, oh, you all love to work so much, you know,
yeah.
we don't have to pay you ever, oh. you know, like that. Oh, we will someday.
Mm-hmm.
And I, yeah, it was. And I said, if the checks are not in the lobby of our hotel at 6 o'clock, we're not doing the show tonight.
All right.
And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be killed,
yeah.
you know, and they were there.
Wow.
But,
wow.
you know, I pulled it. I just said, we're not going on. I'm a killer deputy.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, deputy of badge.
I love being, yeah.
Maybe this is hyperbole. Did I hear that you stood on stage and you told the audience, these people are not paying us?
No.
No.
No, no, no. I didn't do, I don't think, no. I think George may have done
maybe
it.
Maybe George.
No, he did
we'll
it.
We'll find out.
No,
we'll
he did it in the lobby.
Oh.
He did it. He was so laid back. You know, George is the oldest hippie in the world.
Yeah.
And he was just saying, calm down, calm down. I said, no, they're messing with us. Mm-hmm. And the last night, he flipped. He'll tell you. He trashed his dressing room and went in the lobby and started yelling that we weren't being paid. Yeah, we did. Then we wound up in California, and I thought, well, I'll give it a shot, you know, for television.
You had never been there before? I mean, you had never really done any auditioning or anything like that there.
Only for the heartbreak of my life, for the movie of Fiddler.
Oh,
I got the part of Chava. I was cast as Chava. I was flown out. Screen test, all the stagehands said, you got it. And this was a case of agent blowing it. It was hard. I got over it. You know when I got over it? When George, my younger son, in eighth grade, they were doing Fiddler.
Yeah.
And I was assisting the guy who was directing, Don Johansson. I had to teach the girl playing Chava the shadow dance. And I'd known her since she was like five, mm-hmm. Aunt Marissa. And I'm teaching her the dance, and the tears start to come down. And she said, Mrs. Kennedy, why are you crying? And I said, oh, because this is a full circle for me. I can let go of this now. And it's such a beautiful experience, and you're so beautiful. And I can watch the movie now, because I had to teach one of the kids a bottle dance. Mm-hmm. In fact, he is now in Jersey Boys. His name is Rory Max Kaplan.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And, I taught him. He was a really cute kid.
So you went on tour then, and you.
I wound up in. I returned to L.A.
And
I thought, all right, I'll try. I'll try for television.
Yeah.
And then came nothing. It was like I couldn't get arrested. And then came the audition for Evita out there, and that was. Bobby Vance, are you allowed to like use bad words on
your... Yeah.
Oh, okay. When I got the part, he said, I have never seen anybody whose life went from shit to gold in one day.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long were you in L.A.?
4 years.
Shit. 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, two... I moved there in 78, and so like... almost 4 years. 79, I got the part.
Was it a concerted effort to go after the film and television
side? Yeah,
said,
sure.
I'm going to hold off on the stage performing. For
right, I would, yeah. There was one, I remember a Gershwin review where everyone from New York, whoever was there, we were auditioning, and this girl, her father, she had just graduated from UCLA, and her father had given her a lot of money because she wanted to be a director, a producer. And, you know, we're all sitting there trying to get a job, and it's like, you're being really pretentious. So she had us lined up, and she came to each one and said, I went in and sang, and they did a few dance steps, and she said, well, is it possible for you to do a double turn, double pirouette? I said, I can do four if you want.
Yeah.
And I let them have it. I said, you need to speak with respect to the people who are out there sitting on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, we're veterans. You don't ask if we can do double pirouette.
Yeah.
And they offered the show, and then at the same time, I got the audition for Evita.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
just
made the right
went, choice. Oh. Well, I met my husband.
I made the really right choice.
Yeah. He was the mixer.
Okay.
Yeah. And he used to say to me, I thought, you know, I'm helping out. I'm singing full voice. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the old school.
Projected.
Yeah. One day they changed the schedule, and they wouldn't let you do 8 shows a week.
They wouldn't let you do it.
No, which made me crazy. I said, I'm trained to do 8 shows a week. What is wrong with all of you?
Wow.
No, it messed up Elaine Page. She was recording an album, doing her act, and doing 8 shows a week.
Wow.
Well,
of course.
Yeah.
I said, I'm a dancer.
Yeah.
Give me the 8 shows.
Yeah.
No, you can do 6. So we're in in the run, and I had to do 2 on Sunday. And so I thought, well, I just better pace myself.
Yeah.
So I do the first act. I'm kind of like holding back a little bit. And Steve knocks on the door. He always comes to say hello. And he comes in and he says, how do you feel about your first act today? And I went, oh my God, he caught me. I'm not singing full out. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He said, no, how do you feel about your first act? And I actually had a good time with that. Well, it's pretty cool. You know, I said, well, I kind of liked it. He said, that's the best first act you've ever done. He said, "Do you see this?" And he pointed to the microphone. "This is called the 20th century." He said, this is here to help you. And if you continue to scream, I will put a compressor on you.
Wow.
I went, okay. And it was love.
Oh, it was love.
It was love. And then he came here to do Cats.
Yeah.
And I came to do Evita. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do one Broadway show, and he was going to go back to L.A. Yeah.
That's where he was from?
Yeah, from Burbank. Mm-hmm. And he never went back. And now he's a Tony winner.
Yeah, he is.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome. Self-taught.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He started sweeping floors at 16 at Sid and Marty Croft. Got his stagehands union card at 16 in L.A. He worked NBC. He did props in NBC. He did everything. And then a year later, I said to Steve, you know, we should try and have a baby. And he said, yeah, well, you're old, so we'll you know, let's try. And I went, oh, really? So I get pregnant, and my only symptom was that I was dizzy. Both times, Georgie and Jack, and not a great lover of heights to start.
Sure.
So I'd get on the balcony and I'd be going, oh my God. Ooh. And David Cryer would sing, put yourself in the sun, put yourself in the sun. I'm going to put you in the sun. And then one night I did the first act and I thought, I will lose this baby if I go on that balcony, the stress of being afraid to faint.
Not worth it.
I probably could have done it. But I didn't. And so Nancy Opel finished the show, and that was it. I just, I made a choice. And there he is. He was in the Broadway theater.
Right,
yeah.
The right,
yeah. They're both great.
You know, doing such an emotionally exhausting show like Evita, were you guys able to have fun?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keep the lightness.
Who are you talking to, you know? We were so bad. I can't tell you. We were so terrible. They used to short sheet my deathbed sheets on the deathbed, which means French the sheets. So fold the sheet over so I couldn't straighten my legs when I got into the bed. It was just so hilarious. One time on the balcony, the microphones, it was a small turntable. And in the middle of the song, the turntable turned and my back was to the audience like I'm talking to the people and they would run back. And one night, I don't know who pressed the button or what happened, some electrical thing. I start singing, and the thing starts turning. And it stops in the back. And I didn't stop singing, and then it turned back. And then it turned back again and went three quarters. And I'm still singing. And people are, like, peeing on the stage, you know. And then it turned back. And then it finally ended with the microphones over here, and I'm now having to do the speech. And it just, I thought, I can't do this without something in front of me. So I took what would normally be 1,000 pounds of microphones and lifted them up and put them in front of me so that I had something to hold on to. That was it. They only cleared the stage. But the best Evita story was my clothes kept falling off in Rainbow High. There was an understudy going on for the maid. And she was really nervous, really sweet girl. So I go and she puts a skirt on and I turn around and I go, what's the first line? I came from the people or something. Mm-hmm. And I step and the skirt falls off. Mm-hmm. And I am like, already the laughter is now here in my throat. I said, oh my God. So I step out, I do the first verse. I come back. Now I should have a jacket. She puts the skirt on again and whispers, the hook is broken, or the zipper's broken, so hook it. I step down to the next verse, skirt falls off. It's like Dr. Cronkite, hang up the... So now the conductor Larry Blank is laughing his head off, and he's telling the musicians, and I'm like, please don't make me laugh, please don't make me laugh. So now I go back for the third verse, and I put the jacket on, and I have a jacket and a slip. Nobody, I see them coming to the wings because they know something's going on. And the laughter is here now, right here. And I'm thinking, Holocaust, anything, that just anything, Rwanda, anything to make me not laugh. Horror stories. I calm myself down. I go back, and now I'm supposed to get, Oh, so I'm two articles of clothing behind. So on the third round, I get the jacket. Which I'm supposed to have a hat with two hairpins, mm-hmm. and she holds up a mirror. I don't have that. I have a jacket. Now I have to go around in a semicircle to collect a brooch and gloves and purse. Nobody will look at me because they are so hysterical. Nobody can look at me. So I collect, I'm doing, and I get to Janine, and she's supposed to hand me gloves, and I just put the gloves on. Not only does she hand me the gloves, she hands me a purse and holds up a mirror and gives me the hat with the two hairpins. I got it on mm-hmm. for some reason. The last thing I'm supposed to get is, oh, and then she threw the skirt over my arm. and then they threw the stole over my arm. And it looked like I had run out of someone's hotel room. And I held it together until I got into the wings, and then Steve clicked in, and he said it sounded like a bunch of hyenas laughing. We couldn't stop. I think I laughed through the rest of the show.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh my God.
That's so funny.
That was every night.
Wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah, oh my God. We had so much fun. There wasn't a night where the guy playing Chase, Scott Holmes. Mm. I mean, he also was one of the funniest person on the face of the earth. Yeah. So, I mean, it was like a carousel. It was just a great, great experience.
Was Cats like that?
Oh, yeah.
Same thing.
My God. Oh, I mean, they did horrible things to me. They put things in my purse that vibrated. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I won't say what it was.
Yeah, but...
But it vibrated, so my purse would be going like this for Rainbow Tour.
That's...
Oh, it was just a rut. We had such a great time.
How did Cats come about?
I got a call to come in. It was the third replacement. And I went in, and because I stayed home, because Georgie was, he was going to be a year. And so I thought, okay, you know, this would be... It's a Broadway show. It's not that much to do, and it would be a good place to, like, be a great place to get going again.
Yeah.
So had I done anything?
Was Diamonds?
Diamonds. Yeah. Oh, I did Diamonds after Jack. Jack was born, yeah. Diamonds, that was the raunchy version of Crossword Puzzle. Baltimore Blows.
Baltimore Blows.
Cleveland, you suck. Your dad's a friggin' fairy and your mom drives a truck.
Wow.
Stop scratching your butt. What itches your brain? My landlord's going to sue me and the neighbors complain. It's about a Hunter College graduate who, every time she looks out of her window, she starts very elegantly. Mm-hmm. She becomes a truck driver.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I want a recording of this.
Oh, I have... I have the sheet music. Oh, I'll get you the sheet music.
How long were you with Cats for?
3 years.
3 years as Grisabella.
3 years as Grisabella. Oh, that was fun. You know, easy, except going up on that tire. And, yeah, you know, I don't like heights. No.
Totally.
No.
Did anything ever go wrong?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
One night, one of the electricians by accident spilled his coffee on the board.
Oh, yeah.
So short-circuited everything. We're going up on the tire in pitch black, and then all of a sudden the house lights came on. Then they went off. Then the carnival lights went on. Then they went off. But there was always one spotlight on. One great stagehand, Richie Evans. He looked like Buddy Hackett.
of course.
I remember we had a rehearsal with Jillian Lynn, mm-hmm. and they were. She changed my position, the way I walked, and she said, "No, darling, it must look like you're making a little farty," and I said, "Huh?" She said, "No, you're too elegant." And I saw Grisabella as a faded ballerina, mm-hmm. and she said, "No, you must be hunched up, really hunched up." So I said, "Okay, all right, mm-hmm. fine." So that night I did it, walked the way she said, and Richie called me over at intermission. She said, "What are you doing? You look like you're walking like you got a rash." Always listen to the stagehands.
Always.
They know. They know. They could produce shows. They know everything. So, but one night, so the tire, I would have to step onto this cherry picker, yeah. which went up into the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And one night I stepped on, and then we separate, and I knew exactly how the timing was. Same in the magic show with being turned into a panther, mm-hmm. you know, being...
Like you do.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're separating, and I see the tires getting low. It's going, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm hanging in the air in the little cherry picker. And within maybe 3 seconds, I had resigned to myself that I was going to spend the rest of my life on that cherry picker. And it was okay.
Right.
And I could just sit there because there was no way I was climbing down.
Oh, no.
No.
And I actually got down on my knees because I started to get lightheaded. Yeah. But I thought, okay, I could put a little stove over here. And I mean, these I'm not making this up. And then it went up. And he
and
forgot to press the button.
You still had to perform after all.
Well, I was done.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was...
she's decorating the tire.
The tire was decorating
where
it.
It's gonna go.
Oh, yeah. But my favorite was this one night right before I went up to heaven. There was like a moment of silence. And George, he used to come and sit on the sidelines. Did I tell you this? Oh, I told you before that we started. He would sit on the sidelines with my dresser, on the stage seats. Mm-hmm. And he had these little banana curls, and he was like 2 or 3. And there was this moment of silence before the ascending music. And I hear, bye-bye, Mommy.
So cute.
I just thought that was it.
That's so
cute. There it is. Yeah.
Kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were some other... but it was fun.
And then your third Andrew Lloyd Webber, Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, that was really fun. That was only 2 weeks. That was a gateway.
You were a gateway.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved that.
Yeah.
That I had the greatest Joe, Robert J. Townsend, who lives in San Diego. He's a major star out there.
Yeah, he works.
Yeah, works a lot out there. Okay, so I have the quintessential Sunset Boulevard story.
Lay it on us.
The line was, when I speak, it's with my soul. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I thought it was, when I speak, it's with my heart, I can play any part. But as I got to the word heart, I knew that was wrong and that it was soul. But I had already started the H sound, and I went, when I speak, it's with my whole.
Little rewrite, that's okay.
That was it. Oh, different. The stage manager said, "Did she just sing that?" And that was the mantra for the rest of the run. But that was a great one. They're like the last of the great summer stock.
Yeah, Gateway.
That Nogunquit.
Yes,
it's just it's so great, and you put it together, and everybody's a family really quickly.
That's true.
And it's too bad that they don't have enough of those so that you can be trained.
True.
Yeah.
Actually, what's next for you?
Actually, I'm going to Palm Springs, California in February to do Drowsy Chaperone.
Oh, wonderful.
It's a wonderful theater group. They're connected to the high schools, and these are after-school programs. So we combine Larry Rabin's playing the man in the chair.
Oh, great.
And I think the students take part, you know, so it's old people and students.
Are you Mrs. Tottendale?
No, I'm the chaperone.
I was going to say.
No, I'm the chaperone. Yeah. No, I already learned the song. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And then for the next week and a half, I'll teach and because they have a program there for after school.
Great.
And then I think there's a free concert the night on the 27th of February. 27th of February. Yeah, and then in March, I'm going to go to the Riley Center in Ocala, Florida, to do my act. Well, it's called Next to Abnormal.
Love it.
Next to Abnormal.
And it's what I thought was normal growing up, and you know, all the political stuff that went on in the house, and all the people, like my 13th birthday party, with, you know, Dorothy Fields and Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon were there, and we wound up, my piano teacher, who was the last of the cocktail pianists, we all played, that's her idol was Liberace, so we all played like Liberace, and all the girls in the San Remo, Schmaltzy, and Stride.
Yeah.
And Bob put Gwen on a stool, put me on a stool, and he was directing us. And I mean, I thought that was normal. Everybody did that.
That's normal.
Yeah, it's normal. Yeah. You know, totally normal. Wow. So it's a lot of stuff like that.
Thanks for being with
us. My pleasure. Thank you.
This was Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. And today we were talking to the delightful Lonnie Ackerman. Don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
And on Twitter at Broadway Curtain.
Till next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.